Education Committee will come to order, and I do believe we have a quorum. And on our agenda today is confirmation of the Minnesota State Academies. There are two candidates. You have information about both of them in your folder, but one of them was unable to come. But we do have Joyce Dugard with us. I would invite you, Ms. Dugard, to come to the table.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Ms. Dugard. Now, she is being confirmed to the board of the Minnesota State Academies. Back at the time when the State Board of Education used to serve as their board, but I should confess that I had a hand in abolishing that State Board of Education. But in the process, while there was a little angst about it, we created the boards for the residential state academies. And I think that it has provided an opportunity to have people on that board who can be directly engaged with the mission of those institutions. So we're happy to have you with us. And you are you a reappointment, or you have been serving a time without confirmation?
I was first appointed to the board in 2006, and then I reapplied for appointment in 2010, but my application was not acted upon during the legislative session last year. So that's my understanding is that it's come up for confirmation again.
Okay. So would you tell us both a bit about yourself, and since for many of our members this is a new experience, they may not have as much knowledge about our state academies, and I think it might be useful to let us know what you're doing and how those institutions are functioning. And
thank you. It's my pleasure to do so.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Dugard.
The Minnesota State Academies are located in Faribault. There are separate residential academies for students who are blind and students who are deaf. The Academy for the Blind has about 50 students. The Academy for the Deaf has about 130. It includes students who are residential students and students who are day students. There are also a number of students that commute from neighboring communities. On the board, we make all kinds of decisions. We decide about policies and procedures at the school. We advise on capital improvements. We offer advice on personnel. We act a lot on budget items. It's very wide-ranging, very similar to what a board member would do at any other school board, except the students live there. So there are really decisions that are made about 24-hour programming for children. I began my career as a teacher at the School for the Deaf back in 1975. I was a teacher there for about 10 years. After that, I was a special education administrator in the Minneapolis Public Schools. I managed their programs for deaf students for 13 years. And then for the last 14, I've been on the faculty at the University of Minnesota in the teacher education program for teachers preparing to serve children who are deaf and hard of hearing. My parents are deaf, were deaf, and so I grew up using sign language at home and working with deaf people pretty much as a way of life from a very young age. I've enjoyed my time on the board very much. I like to think that I've grown as much from working with people there as I've been able to contribute. And I ask your confirmation so that I can continue my work with the schools.
Impressive credentials.
Oh, thank you.
Are there any questions or members? None? But to have both the life experience as well as the professional experience, I think you really do bring some wonderful things to that board. and it doesn't appear that, is there a motion? I don't know if you had a chance to look at the second one, the papers there, but if you are satisfied that that we have a solid candidate there as well, perhaps you might want to do as we did last time and confirm both of them. I'll let that be your decision.
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson.
I would move that we proceed with the confirmations
of
positively for both candidates.
For both Joyce Dugard and Gwendolyn Jackson.
Yes.
Okay, it's been moved that that we, as a Senate Education Committee, recommend to the full Senate the confirmation of Joyce Dugard and Gwendolyn Jackson for service on the State Board of Board of the Minnesota State Academies for the designated terms. We'll identify those. You were beginning for a four-year term?
My second four-year term, yes.
Second four-year term, okay. And I believe the Gwendolyn Jackson?
She and I were initially appointed to the board the same year.
Okay.
So I believe it, I'm quite sure it's her second term as well.
Second term as well, okay. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and that recommendation will be forwarded to the full Senate.
Great.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
And we have two bills on the agenda today. Is Senator Jungbauer here? Senate file 251. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
Welcome to the committee.
It's good to be here. I see we got a good-sized committee, and everybody's moving stuff along really fast, so we'll make this bill really fast as well, right? members, what this bill seeks to do is actually look at the tenure issue. And currently, you know, if a teacher's teaching for 3 years, you get automatic tenure, basically, and it gets renewed every 5 years. And this bill actually talks about looking at performance measures or other measures in order to have somebody and then have the school board actually make a positive affirmation or vote in order to make sure that that tenure it moves forward. So we're trying to keep it simple, but really trying to open up that discussion that seems taboo. Tenure's been an issue that people talk about, whether it's pro or con. The other side will say, you know, we're making everybody an at-will employee. And really, we're not trying to do that. What we're really trying to say is, you know, you need to be performing your job well. There's very few teachers, I think, that aren't performing their job well. So I think in the real world, I'm kind of looking at the real world where we get job evaluations. In fact, we get them much more frequently than what this bill does or what, you know, tenure or other performance measures actually today. In fact, tenure, the way it works today, really doesn't look at anything other than your time on the job, and you get a protected contract. And members, I guess I don't feel that that's – I hate to use the word feel. Wow, then I seem kind of weird there. But it's I don't think it's right then. That's probably a better word, that teachers don't have to go through some of the same criteria that we do to keep our jobs. I go through a performance evaluation every year to determine if I'm doing my job properly, if I'm actually learning new things, in my case, in engineering and in biochemistry, so that I'm a benefit to the business. And I believe that teachers today ought to have some evaluation process in the tenure system that works similar to that. So that's really what it is in a nutshell. And I'm open to questions. I'm open to other ideas. And so, again, members, it is a something to open up the discussion and talk about how do we move this issue forward to a new age of tenure.
Are there any questions of Senator Jungbauer? And I might just set the stage on this. I think we are going to be seeing other bills that deal with this idea in terms of teacher performance, performance assessment, those kinds of issues. And so it's not my intent to take a vote or to take action on this bill today. We're going to take testimony, and we'll lay it on the table, and I think there are going to be other bills, and I think we ought to look at the various proposals and determine what kind of course of action we may want to do. And I think that will, hopefully that will free us so we're not just thinking about, well, how do I want to, who am I going to tick off with this vote or whatever. The issue is we want to keep focus on the and frame the issue and determine what it is we feel needs to be done and what was the best way to do it. And it may be yours, it may be a part of yours, it may not. There'll be other bills, but you kind of launched the issue, and thank you for that. So have at asking him questions, and then we've got some testimony that we will take as well.
And Madam Chair.
I think Senator Harrington, did I see your hand?
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer. Having had a history of working in the academic field, I'm familiar with the concept of tenure as it refers to college professors. And in that context, it was traditionally there to make sure that professors who might say something that was disagreeable to the administration did not lose their position by bent of the fact that they were saying politically unpopular things. I'm not as familiar with the concept of tenure in K-12 education, and I was wondering if you can kind of enlighten me as to what the rationale for tenure was initially in legislation.
Senator Jungbauer, are you prepared to do that, or should we call on some staff for help in that department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would prefer you call on some staff for some help on that. I don't know exactly, Senator Harrington, how it started, and I do have other bills that deal with some of the issues in terms of the higher education. But I do want to say before we go there is you make some good points, because higher education has actually at the college level taken performance factors into the tenure system. Both the University of Minnesota and MinSCU have constantly been evolving and changing their system of evaluating the professors. And so you're going to see with bills that I'm bringing forward, assuming we have hearings in higher ed, we're going to talk about some of those issues that I think could be fine-tuned. But quite honestly, higher education has done a pretty darn good job of reevaluating the professors and the teaching criteria as to whether or not it was applicable for today, and that to make sure their continuing education was going into the issues of today. So I don't know if staff could help us with the original tenure on K-12. That would be great.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. This may be an unfair thing because we didn't make that assignment ahead of time. There may be somebody in the course of testifying that might have some answers on that, too. I think it's been around with the whole continuing contract. You know, there's a probationary years, and then after you, if you survive that, whatever measure a local district might have, you're granted continuing contract, and then the procedure for removal is much more complicated. In fact, you'll hear people complain, and that there may be some justification in it, but also I think there's the issue is that it takes due process in order to, which is can be fairly lengthy process, in order to remove someone for if they feel that they're not functioning well in the job. And I think there are those, I think that Ms. Allswiger can probably elaborate on that when she comes to the table as well. So we'll help you with that background.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, I did have a question for Senator Jungbauer, but to this particular point, and I was trying to scroll through to see if I had. I had gotten recently an email from, I think it was the Fordham Foundation, where Chester Finn, the former Department of Education official in the, I think, the Reagan administration, and also a good friend of our friend Mitch Perlstein, he wrote a history of and a description of tenure that I wish I would have thought to bring it with me today, and I could have shared it, but what I can make, I've got a hard copy of that in my office, and I'd be happy to make a copy and bring it. But as I recall, his point was that judges have tenure, that's constitutional. University professors have tenure, as Senator Harrington pointed out, for protection of their ability to speak frankly about issues.
Academic freedom.
But tenure in the K-12 system is relatively new, as I recall his point, was that it was something that was instituted relatively recently. And he was calling into question the purpose that we would have to have it, and I think raising some of the same concerns that Senator Jungbauer in his bill is raising. And I frankly share those concerns. I think that we've talked somewhat, and I know we're going to talk more about teacher evaluation and how do we make sure we have effective teachers and how do we do that. And there's been some proposals. I've talked to some of the folks interested in this and devising what I think might be a fairly complex structure to devise standards and to implement standards on what effective teachers are and how do we make sure those standards get disseminated and people in school districts use those standards and, you know, evaluate teachers. And it occurs to me that if we created an opportunity for schools to periodically make decisions on teachers, we wouldn't have to do all that. That they would have a very strong self-interest to decide whether or not a particular teacher should be kept, and they would be compelled to come up with some way to evaluate that would help them answer the question whether it makes sense to continue the contract or continue the employment of a particular individual. So I think to the extent that we're interested in finding ways to make sure teachers are evaluated for effectiveness, I would almost prefer that we not be in the position of deciding what effectiveness is and then writing a bunch of rules and trying to find ways to make those rules happen at the local level, but instead create a condition that encourages local districts to do that. And you might get some variation, I agree, from district to district on what they decide is effective teaching. But it might be a lot easier to effectuate. It might be a lot easier for them to execute. So I support the bill. I did want to have Senator Jungbauer comment a little bit about, and he and I talked somewhat about this before he came to committee, but the portion of the bill that deals with the school board's role in deciding on contracts of individual teachers. And I just, Senator Jungbauer, if you wouldn't mind just talking a little bit about that provision of your bill and how you understand that working and why that approach is in your opinion, the way to go. I have some question about it, and I just want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hand, thank you for the question. Again, members, I want to make it clear, I'm not sure that this is the best way to handle it, but today there's no affirmative vote on that continuing contract. And so I looked at trying to keep all politics local. I think the school board, I think Senator Hand made some good points that I don't want to tell somebody, here's the performance standards. I actually hate the fact that the federal government's involved in education, and I think we micromanage it down from there. But I think that school boards should live and die by their election certificates just like we do. And so I thought to keep it local was to have the school board make those affirmative votes on those continuing contracts. Again, open to other ideas. But Senator Hand, I like the idea that we should not be writing the performance standards. I think it should change from district to district depending on what are they trying to accomplish, how do they feel their teachers need to move into the next generation of knowledge to get that knowledge base to the kids in that district. So,
Senator Harrington.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer, while I agree that generally speaking I would love to see us have less intrusion into the business of the school districts, I am a little concerned about the fact that we have students who will be moving from district to district, and we do need some consistency in terms of standards so that the child that moves from southern Minnesota to the metro area or vice versa is actually working off of an equivalent playing field. And I think it's also true for teachers who may move. In the state of Minnesota, for example, with police officers, they have created basic standards that say these are the base standards. Now, every department can modify those, but I think it's useful for the state to have some input on to what consistent standards we want to see across the board. And so, while I also actually support this, I support the idea of doing the evaluations. I really think that is an important part. If we don't measure, if we don't set standards and hold people to them, we won't see exceptionally performing teachers, as we've heard in this committee regularly that that is what we need. But I do think the state does have a place in setting some benchmarks, and I hope actually that we don't set the benchmarks too low. I think we really need to set those benchmarks and raise that bar higher if we're really going to get exceptional teachers.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer, I'm concerned about putting the school board in this role. I wouldn't be for that because I think, number one, the principal is really ultimately that's where the buck stops with regard to the evaluation and the continuing contract relationship. And I would hate to see parents who are elected as board members, they are not there observing those teachers. They're not there day to day. You know, if their child had a good or a bad experience, got a good grade or a bad grade, that would affect how they might view tenure. And I think that's a kind of a firewall that we don't want to cross. So I wouldn't be for this particular approach as looking at tenure.
Madam Chair?
Where was I? Oh, Senator Jungbauer. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the table.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, and actually Senator Harrington's points as well. I think Senator Olson and I talked about this a little bit, and that's part of the reason, members, we decided, or Senator Olson decided, to put these ideas on the table and bring a lot of things together as we talk through some of these things. That's a great point. This was a starting point in terms of how do you reaffirm a contract and who should. And to Senator Harrington's point, I believe this year we're going to see a lot of different performance measures proposed, and I think some of those measures would cross over and be able to be put into some of this evaluation. So I'm in agreement with you, Senator Harrington. I think we should put the bar high, and in fact, I think No Child Left Behind and some of the other programs actually reduced things to the least common denominator and brought us down in some of our education standards. So I'm all about, you know, raising the bar, getting our kids more into math, science, technology, to really change the way we do education to get kids excited, but to meet them at their level. And I think you'll see a lot of proposals come through this committee that could kind of be joined up with this performance type of thing. So I think it will evolve in this committee, and I think it'll you guys will have some great ideas and come to some great conclusions.
And Senator Jungbauer, I think we all of us, even sitting around this table, are approaching this from some different perspectives. The dynamics of especially that school board action, if your districts are small and you have a fairly small staff versus some that are very large, that, you know, you know, large school districts, it would be pretty hard to have a school board that could engage and analyze all of those performance and determine that. It might just tend to be blessing somebody else's decision in the first place. Now, there may be a role for that. At least boards should be aware of the work that is being done and what the actions have been taken, because I think they do have some ultimate accountability. But the detail of it, I think, maybe is more than could be expected, especially if it's going to apply to all school districts.
Madam Chair, to kind of comment on that too is, you know, with what we have with technology today, I think we could engage teachers, because members of teachers that I've talked to, you know, good performing teachers, they're not afraid of a reevaluation. But somebody that's, you know, at that point where teaching is kind of burning them out and things like that, they're worried about this. But I think it gives people some way to reengage and let them know that you're not just going to skate. You're going to have to come up. You're either going to have to decide, I'm going to bring my level of performance up, my engagement with the students, or I'm going to get out of the teaching business. So I've had a lot of teacher support, and actually a lot of teachers that say, I wish we had more ways to get rid of that guy over there or that gal over there that's not doing their job, because I'm working my tail off and, you know, they're dragging us down. So, again, I think, you know, you've got the right ideas of how to move this forward, but we could engage with a survey. I do a lot of creating surveys online. We could get a lot of teacher input so that they're part of where do they think, you know, this vote should come down to, this affirmative vote.
Okay. I saw a couple others. Let's see. Senator Stump.
thank you, Madam Chair. Sometimes when I read the legislation, I the question that goes through my mind is, what is the problem that we're trying to solve? And I'm, you know, maybe you kind of answered it right toward the end there. Is it really some problem teachers that the superintendent or the board can't or don't think they can get out of the system or get out of the school? Or is it a are we trying to put in place a better system of evaluation? I think that's a shortcoming in our education process, but the school boards don't have to be mandated by the legislature to put in place a evaluation system for their personnel. I think the reason we don't have a good evaluation system in many school districts is because it just takes a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of expense. And I'm not sure we really know what a good evaluation system should be. You know, we tried last year or our last couple years, and I think we could come pretty close to creating some parameters for an evaluation system. But I would hate to see us say, okay, you know, do this, do that, you know, so specifically, because we really don't have the wherewithal to know those staff people. It's really the board and the principal, and I think any good evaluation system really needs to hinge very heavily on that local district. The minute I think it gets beyond that, you know, just evaluation systems tend to become perfunctory. And I don't know how many we've seen in the Senate that we've gone through over the years that I've been here, ourselves included, trying to evaluate our staff. What does it end up being? Well, a list we just check and go down, and pretty soon, you know, it's past due. Half of us haven't turned them in, so we just, you know, click them off. So I think it would be important, I think, to have a good discussion of what the problem is. And if it is those individual teachers that we have heard about in some district that seem to be difficult to get rid of, that's what we ought to really go after and say, okay, you know, is it documentation that the superintendent and board haven't done, or is it the system itself that's failing, like these continuing contracts? I'm guessing that the continuing contracts are there for a purpose, and the purpose might be we don't want to shut our schools down. I don't know. Maybe not. I it would be interesting to have a hearing on the history of some of this, too.
We will probably get into it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Stumpf, again, good points. But one can't assume just because something was valid in the past that it's valid today. There are problems, and I will explain, you know, what problem that happened to our family was my oldest son had a teacher that was a bad teacher, and he kept moving students ahead. And there was a few, you know, our son had some problems in education. But he hit kind of the wall in fifth grade, and this teacher, we kept going in and seeing him, and he would not, you know, answer specifically how he was going to help our son to move forward. He was going to pass our son, and our son should not have passed the grade. And talking to the superintendent, the principal, and they said, well, you don't understand. I wasn't a senator then. You don't understand, Mr. Jungbauer. We can't get rid of these people. We have to go through this and this and this and this, and they just know the rules, so they kind of skate around so that it makes it very difficult to get rid of them. Long story short, we decided to homeschool, and we homeschooled all our children. Our last one is at home now, but we just, in ninth grade, put him in a charter school because we found a charter school that's great on the math and sciences, things that are passionate to me. But it's those kind of personal stories that you hear from others. So what worked in the past, and it was probably put in for a great reason, but today we need a different framework. It's a different time. Our students aren't performing the way they should. And there's a number of models around the country and around the world that we can draw on for some of those standards. But I agree with you. We ought not to go too in-depth. But to Senator Harrington's point, again, you made a good point that probably we should come up with the framework because it's others don't have the time and the wherewithal to put the framework together. So if we put the framework together, then let the locals figure out how that, you know, and get input from them, but how they can work with that framework without us telling them specifically or micromanaging things. So,
thank you. Yeah, I think some of you may remember I made a comment at a prior meeting that, you know, as a system, our public education has had changing demands on them, and that has changed from being providing opportunities to learn to being expected to bring results to that learning. And the recognition that the teacher is very key in that, and quality is important. That carries with it that need for how do you assess or how do you evaluate, and that is two-pronged. I mean, if you want quality teaching, part of it's in preparation, but part of it is seeing evaluation as the tool, just as teachers have been talking to us about, that they want to use even assessment and evaluation of their students as a tool to helping them grow and progress in their learning. That is also true for teachers. But the other also is a performance to see if they are, in fact, performing up to their expectations and the need for serving those students and using it. So that's kind of, we're all in this trying to determine and sort out what's the best course of action and how do we do it, because there's been fear over time that these are just tools that can be used politically or, you know, just as Senator Harrington said, that, you know, you might disagree with someone and have not have a solid rationale for making a decision that's pretty tough on people.
And Madam Chair, to Senator Stump's point as well, when you go to plenty of education seminars, and I attend around the country as well, and I've never been to a seminar members where this wasn't one of the issues they talked about as being a problem. So it's a problem across the country. I don't know that anybody has a specific answer to each area, because I think some of those contracts and the tenure are set up different, but I have not been to any education seminars that haven't dealt with tenure as an issue.
Okay. Thank you. Senator DeCrive.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer, I think this is a great discussion. I think we need to have more. Quite frankly, I really appreciate Senator Harrington, Senator Bonoff, and Senator Stump's input on this, because I think every one of them made some fine points. As I was going around my district, Senate District 25, I've had on a number of occasions, teachers, as I've happened to knock on their door, not knowing that they were teachers, take me into their house because they didn't want to have people see me talking to them out on their doorstep. And they're telling me, we have some problems in our education system. And they're talking to me about the fact that we have some problems in being, you know, there are some underachieving teachers, and they're costing our kids, and it's not fair to the good teachers, it's not fair to the parents, and ultimately it's certainly not fair to the kids, because I think we just learned the other day with the Bush Foundation, and they talked about underachieving teachers and how badly it can hurt our kids. When I vote on this committee, it will be for three reasons. It will be for the children, number one, number two, for the children, and number three, for the children. And I think that's what all of us need to be thinking about. We have to do whatever we can to put the very best teachers in front of every classroom in the state of Minnesota. If there are some underachieving teachers, which hopefully a program similar to this could help us root some of them out, I think evaluations need to be included in this. I would agree with the people that talked about that. There has to be some kind of evaluations put into place. I like the idea of a framework that the state might put together and let the local governments refine it. But I certainly think this is something that the state of Minnesota has to move to in order to ensure that that we don't continue down the path of making it very, very expensive and very, very time-consuming to move an underachieving teacher out of the classroom. I knocked on the door of an administrator who shared with me that to get rid of an underachieving teacher takes up 3 to 4 years of a high degree of a principal's time, and on top of that still face an $80,000 lawsuit, which we can't afford. So why, you know, we can't afford to go down that path. So there has to be a way that that we can evaluate teachers fairly, and if somebody's not pulling their weight, not doing their job, there has to be a way to remove them.
Senator Hand, I think, is first, and then Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I think Mr. Cook, did you pass out the my comment earlier about the article I read that Chester Finn had published, and somebody found a copy of it and printed it, and I wanted to have those distributed to the members of the committee. But to the earlier point about tenure and where it got started, this I thought was timely. It talks about tenure, talks about university tenure in this country, and it actually didn't, according to Chester Finn, didn't really get formalized until the 1970s when there were some Supreme Court decisions that formalized the practice in universities. In the third paragraph into this, it talks about, it says, in some states, public school teachers began to gain forms of job protection that resembled tenure as early as the 20s, but these largely went into abeyance during the Great Depression and were not formally reinstated until states pressed hard by teacher unions enacted tenure laws between World War II and about 1980. So tenure in public schools is not a long-standing practice in this country. It's fairly recent in the form that we have it. And all that is to say is that while we have that practice today and it is fairly standard, it is not something that we have seen for a great length of time in the history of this country. And you can read the entire article that Chester Finn, his opinion on this, and take it for whatever value you want to give to it. But I think that the point that should be made is what is the purpose of tenure? What does it serve to do? How does it serve to make education better? How does telling somebody that their job is protected for life, how does that make education better? And I would argue that it may, at the very least, be irrelevant to making education better and may, in some cases, do harm to making education better if it is an impediment to principals and other administrators making effective decisions at the local level about how to use the resources that they have, namely their personnel resources. And I would invite members of the committee. I had a conversation very recently in the last 2 or 3 weeks with a school administrator who told me confidentially, alone, I was one-on-one with this person, just the two of us talking. And I'd invite you to do the same thing, get together with a principal or an administrator and talk one-on-one, off the record, and just ask, are there teachers in your building or in your school district that you think ought not to be teaching? And I will guarantee you the answer will be yes. And they probably can tell you exactly who those people are if you really press them. And then if you ask them, well, why don't you do something about them? And they will give an answer very similar to what we heard about the process that it takes to address this problem is costly and time-consuming and a distraction from the ability to focus on the main job, which is teaching. But if we expect local school districts to manage schools and you don't give them tools to manage the single largest element of that, which is their human resource, if you don't give them tools to do it, how in the world can we expect them to be innovative to solve the problems that we expect them to solve? So I think, and I frankly agree somewhat with Senator Bonhoeffer about the role of the school board in this. I'm not so sure, Senator Jungbauer, you and I had some conversation whether that's really the right mechanism. But I do believe that we ought to take a look at and wrestle with this idea of how to deal with tenure and ask the question of how helpful this is if we're interested in creating innovation and, focus on solving problems and giving that responsibility and the tools to do it back to local boards. So I just would invite you to read the article. Maybe it'll help contribute to the discussion that we have going forward. And I appreciate the chair's interest in continuing this discussion. And perhaps we'll see some other bills that deal with the same thing.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hand, you make a good point. And the reason we look at, again, kind of going within the framework of tenure, the 3 to 5 years, I thought in terms of in having done 25 years of youth ministry myself, if you come up with a new innovative program, it's going to take time to implement. If you're a teacher, you don't want to have somebody looking over your shoulder every year, because it takes time to get this thing to work. And so this five-year period, the first three-year period, like is in current tenure, get evaluated. But then after that, if you're trying something new, you're still protected for 5 years. I mean, that's unheard of in the real job market. So I think that gives a teacher some protection to try to implement some new innovative programs and prove that they work before they get reevaluated. So that's why I thought, why not work within that same kind of a time period but still have this reevaluation? So again, it's unheard of in the real job world. I mean, we're all basically at-will employees. If you work in the kind of field I work in, if you're not performing, you're gone, and it's pretty darn simple. So I think that we still, I believe our teachers perform a very specific role and probably ought to deserve some protection to implement those programs, and that's what I tried to keep within this framework and time frame.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps this goes without saying, but I just feel compelled to say it. Just the tone, the tenor of the conversation, just to make sure that all of our great teachers out there understand we so much appreciate what they do, so that they don't misunderstand our conversation here. We do very much appreciate what our teachers do day in, day out. They work really, really hard. I've got three kids in school right now, sixth grade, third, and first. Parent-teacher conferences are tomorrow night. I can't wait to hear from those teachers how the kids are doing. And I just want to make sure that all our teachers know that we all here, all of us, I think it's fair for me to speak on behalf of all of the senators gathered here today, really appreciate what our teachers do. So just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Senator Daley. I believe there's some folks that want to testify. So would it be another? Senator Stump, do you want to comment, or do you want to wait for testimony?
Well, Madam Chair, just a comment on Senator Jungbauer's comment. We have employees, too, and the first thing that happens if an employee isn't, you know, up to the level of performance that we want, we don't fire them. We show them. We teach them what he or she is supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And I think that that's an important component of any, you know, business, is that you have somebody come, you hope that employee is trustworthy, learnable, teachable, and can function and do the job. And they don't come with all the skills that they need or knowledge that they need, and that's a key component. And I voted for that Teach for America, and the reason I did was because they spent money looking for the best candidates that they could find. And after they found those candidates, they just didn't drop them off the edge of the in a school classroom. They spent more money teaching them and monitoring and mentoring those people so that they had a good foundation. What do most of our public schools do? They hire a young teacher at the lowest possible salary that they can get them at, or her at, drop them into a classroom that's probably the toughest class of all, because the older teachers have probably moved up, and they say sink or swim. And that's about it. I mean, that's really about it. For the last couple years, we've taken their staff development money away from them, so they can't do much, and if they have a small school, the staff development money probably doesn't fund a conference brought in by telecommunications. I mean, that's about all the money they have. So I think I think we need to look at this in a much broader perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, we want these young men and women to succeed. And as we heard the Bush Foundation, I think it's a perfect example of what we should do, is we should get every teacher, we should make the standards tough, but be sure that once we get a good person in there, that we really give them the support they need to be successful.
Great. Thank you, Senator Sum. There's some testifiers. Roger Aronson.
As he comes up, Madam Chair, it occurs to me as we have this discussion, too, and we think about what our teachers, they ought not to be afraid to talk to us openly in public about tenure. There's something wrong with that attitude. If they're afraid to talk to us about it, again, there's just something wrong, and we need to open up that discussion, and that, members, is why I'm here to open this up. It shouldn't be a taboo discussion. It should be something that's open and that we can look at very seriously. So thanks.
And that Senator Youngbar, also plays to leadership. The same process there. The leadership within the building has great effect, and Mr. Aronson represents some of those folks, so let's hear what he has to say. And
Madam Alstrider, Chair, members, I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary Principals Association and the Secondary School Principals Association, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and visit about this bill today. I think the close of Senator Youngbauer's comments are absolutely right. In terms of our system of teachers and principals and continuing contract, whatever label you wanted to have, we should make the case that this is worth keeping. This discussion is a good one. Good things come of it. It gives the committee an opportunity to say some very good things about teaching and about principaling in Minnesota and some changes that we should make. And so I think that's well taken. We don't support the bill for a couple of reasons, and I wanted to share some things with the committee of what directions we think we should go to improve teaching, to address the issues that Senator Youngbauer is identifying, which is weak teaching, and which underneath all of that is weak principaling as well, in some circumstances. We have 1,700 school principals in Minnesota. That's head principals, assistant principals, about 650 elementary, and about 1,100 secondary. These are tough jobs. They're interesting jobs. They're dynamic jobs, but they're long and they take a lot of time. People that work these jobs work very, very long hours. And I know I'm married to a school principal, and it takes a lot of time for what they do. And we want them now to do a lot of stuff. We want them to do school discipline. I mean, it's passé to talk about that. You know, we should be just an instructional leader all the time. But I have to tell you, there is an expectation that they do school discipline and that those schools are run well. We need those schools to be secure. We have no more important mission than school safety, the safety of the kids when they're there. And we talk about this with the school principals. We have 820,000 students in Minnesota. And if you think about this, members, if you had a business and you had 830,000 of something and you could find on any given day 829,000 of those things, you'd be having a pretty good day. But our standard is to find each and every kid every day, put them on a bus, get them to school, have them move from classroom to classroom, and get them home in the same piece, just a little smarter. That's a tremendous challenge. We're up to it, and we do it. Now, the principals' associations, in response to some legislation last year, spent some resources, brought some people in, set up a committee. We've established a program now for the evaluation of Minnesota school principals. We've talked to the chair about it. We've talked to staff about it. You're going to see more about this, but we have a model that ought to be used for the evaluation of principals in Minnesota. Some legislation is being drafted right now. We're going to come forward with it to say each district should have a policy that provides for the evaluation of school principals and teachers, with some minimum components of those policies and a rubric that's effective, and that these issues are tracked on an annual basis so that we can address in part some of the things that Senator Youngbauer discussed here with the committee and the things that Senator Stump discussed as well about additional training. The statute that you're looking at here, if you read the court decisions on this, they say that this statute was created to prevent arbitrary discharge. It's a safety net. Is it necessary in all of the cases? No. I mean, when you have safety nets, most of the time the window washer doesn't fall off the side of the building. But when he or she does, they're glad to have it. We have some boards that act arbitrarily sometimes. These statutes that we're talking about protect the employees. I mean, really, that's what they do. From those particular circumstances. We move a lot of people out of the system and counsel a lot of people out of the system that you don't hear about. I do, because I represent the 1,700 of them. We generally don't go to a high-profile discharge hearing, but anecdotally, I do a half a dozen of these a year of when a district says, you're not a good fit with us. We want you to go somewhere else. The horrible discharge cases, those are easy. I mean, we fire those people and we take away their license. I mean, and that happens. And those cases are reported. They're at the Bureau of Mediation Services in those arbitration pieces. And the Board of School Administrators that you confirmed the members of last week, they look very closely at every complaint that comes to them, you know, on licensure matters. Our position is that the overall system works pretty well. Most districts, the data that I've seen, over half of them have an evaluation system for teachers and principals. All of the districts have to have an evaluation system for teacher and principals. We're trying to move there in concert with you. I'd say that the difference these days is, and this is sort of the spirit of what Senator Jungbauer is talking about, principals are instructed in Minneapolis, for example, that they need to be in the classroom at least 2 hours a day observing teachers. You know, and think about that as a standard. I mean, what are we trying to do with this? They're supposed to improve instruction for these teachers, help the teachers that are moving along, and as what principals tell me, for the senior teachers, to get them to look in the mirror and see the things that they do well and enhance those. So, Madam Chair, we think this is a good discussion piece. We don't think it's quite the way to go. There's some technical pieces in it, too. And there's some other things, and we'll visit with Senator Jungbauer and with members of the committee as well, with ideas that we may have to make the system work. In the end, I might say, this statute, I think it is consistent with what Senator Hand said about someone saying, boy, I have someone I'd like to get rid of. But consistent with that, this statute has withstood the test of time. I mean, this statute has been around a long time. We have not changed it much, you know, at the Capitol. Why? Because all in all, it works. The last major change we made was in 1989 when we added mandatory arbitration into the discharge statute. When we did that, teachers were threatened by that. They thought that was going to be a bad thing. You know, and I'm sorry, the school boards were afraid that was going to happen. It was going to be a bad thing that the arbitrators would always rule for the teachers. The first case that came out, they fired the teacher. And it raised a lot of those comfort levels. And so, you know, the change this thing, look at it very closely. Be very, very careful for the unintended consequences that you might have of this. Let's enhance it. Let's talk about evaluation and move that way through the year. We need, you know, and this committee will be hearing about this over and over again, but we need resources. We need assistant principals. We need counselors. We need school psychologists. We need staff development for teachers. You know, that's nothing new to your ears. I'm preaching to the choir on that. But sometimes the choir could use a little preaching. And we want to work with you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson, and sometimes we'll lecture you, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, just a couple of questions. Are principals tenured?
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, yeah, they're a continuing contract in the statute, yes. The peculiar thing is that the word tenure doesn't appear in either statute. So they have continuing contracts, yes.
And Madam Chair, the reason I ask is that I understand the desire to preserve a system that exists. I understand that. But I think that the question should be asked, and you talked about the necessity of tenure as a way of protecting from arbitrary and capricious dismissal. But we have the same circumstances in every activity, every enterprise, and we have in the Constitution due process. Not only in the Constitution, but also in lots of case law that is designed and is there for that very reason, to prevent arbitrary and capricious dismissal of people, that recognizes people have a right to be dealt with fairly and justly. And to say on top of that, on top of the due process protections that we all have, regardless of where we work, to add a condition that says, in addition to that, you've got this continuing contract or tenure status, whatever we want to call it, on top of that, you have to wonder why. Why do we need that extra level of protection for an employee that doesn't exist in any other enterprise that we have? I think that's the question. And as I pointed out from the comments that Chester Finn made, this is not a long-standing condition or feature of our education system. And with all due respect, I don't think it does work. I think we've talked about for years, and the years I've been in the Senate, which hasn't been that long, I guess, but we have as a society talked for years about the struggle we have in getting the achievement gap or getting a higher performance, and we all recognize the talents and the virtues of teachers, and why can't we unlock their ability to really focus on getting this job done? And I would argue that part of the reason we can't do that is we have a structure that is so difficult to be innovative in. And what are the things that prevent innovation? And I think that one of them is this structure of employment that makes it very tough for a school board or an administration to decide we want to do this differently and to start to do that. And we've got to look at our teaching staff and make changes and to be able to do that. I think we have to ask those questions. So again, my question is, does this aid or does this impede the ability for teachers and school districts to be innovative in finding and employing the right teachers in the right place at the right time? So,
Mr. Aronson, would you like to respond?
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, I would say that just, you know, directly to your question, I think this is far down the scale on meeting the goal that you just articulated. I think that if you change this, I don't think you'd do much with regard to that goal. I think there's a lot of other things that have to happen with regard to that goal. If you wiped out the tenure system and you said principals could hire whomever they wanted from top to bottom, and we have 50,000 teachers out there, and make everybody at will, suddenly principals wouldn't have time to work with the teachers. We'd be doing a lot of recruiting, because we'd have to go find people, you know, to fill all these slots. And in the end, we'd have some very high flyers, and we'd have some very weak performers that we'd want to fire, and we'd have some average people. But the goal would be, what do we do with them? How do we work them? How do we mold them? And I think we can do that within the context of the current system without subjecting people to arbitrary discharge. I mean, and I just say, too, this isn't on top of those constitutional protections that you're describing, the due process protections. These are those due process protections. It's precisely what they are. And people have them because they're public employees. They're articulated a bit differently than maybe a veterans preference standard or some other standards. But that's they're not in addition to that. That's what they are.
Senator DeGrave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, first of all, I too applaud the great teachers we have in Minnesota. I think we have some of the best teachers in the world right here in Minnesota. And I want to make sure that the intent of this is to enhance our educational system and not hurt it. I have a question for you. Are you against this bill conceptually? Are you against entirely ever having a teacher be at a point where, you know, their tenure, if you will, could be reevaluated at some point in time in their career, or do you think it should just be ongoing and the system we have now is the one we need to live within?
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't think anybody could say that you would ever say the system shouldn't ever be evaluated and looked at and that we ought not evaluate people. I think that would be I don't think that would be prudent, and I don't think that's what the clients that I represent as school principals, I don't think that they would say that. I mean, and as I started out saying, I think having the discussion is important, and to the extent that we move towards something that everyone's comfortable with, that's how we make this stuff work. And so I think Senator Youngbauer is right to bring the issue forward. We're right to have the discussion about this, and in the end, it's hard to pass stuff, you know, so you like to get a lot of people on board. I think we will continue to have that. I expect we will continue to have that discussion with very thoughtful people and come to a good result.
We are kind of running short on time and have another bill. Ms. Allschweiger would like to testify. Could you give us kind of a brief framework of where you're coming on this so you know what our intent is with this, that this discussion will continue? And I think we could probably keep going here, but I think we're going to revisit this issue with other ideas as well for discussion. So welcome, Ms. Allschweiger.
By the way, Madam Chair, Ms. Allschweiger did promise that she would get the whole committee to sing happy birthday to me, as this is my first bill of the year.
Oh, that's
birthday,
right.
So.
We get it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I will not be leading that.
Oh.
That's a good thing.
Now, why is that? Is that, have you got a grudge against Senator Youngbauer, or does it have something to do with your particular talents?
It has to do with my talents. would be happy to sing to him privately. we'll get everybody else to
sing to. Oh, Ms. Augsburger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. I think that there's some confusion about what tenure or continuing contract is. It is really only the right to a hearing, and I have heard comments about this is a job for life, or it takes 3 to 4 years to get rid of a teacher. Believe me, if an administrator does their job, evaluates a teacher, determines the teacher has a problem, documents it, tells the teacher, this is my concern, this is how you need to improve, follows up in a couple of months, a couple more months. At the end of the year, if that teacher has been unwilling or unable to change, that administrator can terminate the teacher. And you can talk to our attorneys, and over again, this has happened. I want to make that clear. Education Minnesota supports, as Senator Stumpf and others have said, a quality evaluation system. This is not the real problem that we're talking about today. We should be putting our efforts towards a quality teacher evaluation program, an evaluation system that is ongoing, that is cyclical, where teachers can count on administrators coming into their classroom. These evaluators are trained. It's focused on improving instruction and not focusing on gotcha or discipline. But if discipline is called for, it is called for. And at the end of the year, you know, the teacher has made the improvement or not. But we support high-quality teacher evaluation, just like we support probationary period for teachers. If a teacher is not doing well, we suggest that the administrator will suggest that we get rid of the teacher, and there's nothing that Education Minnesota or the union can do about it, and if they're not performing, they should not be teaching. We want quality teachers in the classroom. But tenure, as it's often called, continuing contract status, just gives you the right to a hearing. And I would say, even more importantly, it requires the administration and the teachers to put the facts on the table. In other words, you can't arbitrarily say, you know, I really didn't like the pitch of your voice, or I really don't like your religious beliefs. Well, of course, that's another issue that would be separate, but when you're talking about at will, you can get rid of a teacher at will for a good reason, for a bad reason, or for no reason. And this bill actually allows the school board to put a teacher in an at-will status. Yes, they would get a hearing if they were going through a termination, yes, but there isn't any hearing to be put in an at-will status. Once you're put in the at-will status, they can get rid of you for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason, but not for an unlawful reason, such as religious beliefs, gender, et cetera. I want to tell you, as a former teacher, how I see continuing contract, what it means to me. I was an advocate for my kids in my classroom, and I knew that I could speak out in my staff meeting, the faculty meetings, and with my administrator about what I thought was good for my kids in my classroom. Whether it was at an IEP meeting for a special ed student, advocating for the needs of these individuals, I knew that my administrator couldn't get me because I was advocating for the kids. I could speak out about curriculum issues. I could speak out on any issue. I guess that's why I'm here, why I'm a lobbyist now, because maybe I speak out. But I could speak out. And I knew that when it came to, if there was a problem with an administrator thinking maybe Jan isn't supposed to be teaching anymore, I knew that the facts would be at the table in a hearing. And it's not just arbitrary. It is a little ironic that while we're talking about the evaluation is coming into play, we're talking about tenure, that you, tomorrow on the floor, you're going to be debating and voting on a bill that repeals the staff development set-aside. Money that should be used to improve teacher instruction. How can we be hearing the bills that are in conflict like that? I guess I will conclude by saying that we believe that 10-year continuing contract puts accountability in place for teachers, for administrators, for school board members, because they do have to make decisions about whether they continue to hire a teacher. They make sure that they should be making sure that teachers are evaluated. And it allows everyone in the school system, the teachers in the school system, to be excellent advocates for kids. We all have different personalities. And you may have had a teacher for your children that was not a perfect fit. But they may have been a good teacher. But maybe the personality, it was a personality issue. We live in a big global world. People are unique. But we believe that in any kind of system where you are evaluating teachers, it should be based, it should be research-based. And if you are going to terminate a teacher, it should be based on the facts, and that teachers should have the right to speak out and be advocates for kids.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. I'm going to lay Senate File 251 on the table. Thank you very much for your presentation and for all of you for the discussion. I think we've gotten some of the issues out. We haven't resolved. This isn't the end of this, but I do want to give Senator Kubley a chance to finish. As he's coming to the table, Senator Hand, you're being very persistent here.
Madam Chair, all I want to do is make the motion to lay the bill on the table.
You want to make a motion to do it?
Yes.
Rather than my being
she
just...
She did it.
I just wanted to make sure we did this properly, so I move we lay Senate File 251
so you're not gonna let me have the power to lay it on the table, right? I can't do that? So, okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator Hand. You're moving to lay that. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. The motion or the bill is laid on the table. Senator Hand, we're going to explore that, but this would require a motion to take it off. I was laying it on the table that we weren't going to take any action at all. So that's we'll determine whether that is allowable or not. I think we're all in a learning mode, so whatever. That's what we have done in this case. So, thank you. Welcome, Senator Kubley.
Well, thank
you have
Madam
Senate
Chair.
File 104.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, just a few preliminary comments on Senate File 104. It does appear to me that, and there are other people here who will speak to this, that the problem that has been had by Caleb Jordovsky's relatives really has been covered in current statute, but it also appears to me that the school district was not following that. But I would like to have you hear the story about that. It's a very compelling one. You have a story of the student in print with you today, members. I hope you take the time to read that. It's a sad story, but I think it bears hearing. Madam Chair, if it is agreeable with the committee, I'd like to let the folks with me tell their story.
Thank you very much. Would you identify yourself for the record? And
yes,
welcome,
Madam Chair. Lorraine Dvorak.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Tim Jadowski.
Tim
Jadowski.
Jadowski.
Caleb's
okay.
Father.
Who would like to go first? Okay.
On Thursday, September 3rd, 2009, our lives changed forever.
At around 5:45 p.m., Tim walked into our house and found his 15-year-old son, Caleb Jadowski, on the floor. Caleb had completed suicide. Caleb did not live with us, but was able to come to our house most any time he wanted. We never saw signs that something was wrong. His appetite was enormous. He was sleeping well and laughing and joking like he'd always done. On Friday afternoon, Tim, his ex-wife, and her husband were at the funeral home making arrangements when the funeral director asked what grade Caleb was going to be in. Tim stated 10th grade. Tim's ex-wife stated 9th grade. Tim looked at his ex-wife and said that Caleb was going to be 16 in March, and he was going to be in 10th grade. Lisa said that they held him back. We live 20 miles from the school and 10 miles from his ex, or 20 miles from his ex-wife and 10 miles from the school. Around 2.5 years earlier, we were not getting direct answers from his ex-wife about his three boys. One of the things was about school. Tim called the school 2 times requesting information. He also went out to the school in person and requested information again. He stood there and watched the attendance secretary write it all down. When we would ask his ex-wife or the school about Caleb's classes, their responses were, he is doing fine but needs to study more. You feel by asking these questions to your ex-wife and the school that no one would lie to you or keep information from you, but Tim's ex-wife and school did. After Caleb passed away, we requested his school records to see what was going on with his grades. The school denied Tim's request, and we were told we had to have a private meeting. We finally received his records, found out that Caleb had failed over half his classes in 7th grade and 8th grade. He also failed over half his classes when he repeated 8th grade. All the school was doing for him was having high school students tutor him. He was not receiving any other type of help. When we asked if Caleb knew he was going into 9th grade and not going to repeat 8th grade again, the response we got from the principal is he should have. When we asked the principal again about if he knew or if he had told Caleb that he was not going into 8th grade, that he was going to 9th grade again, he said, no, we did not tell him. There is an alternative school in Montevideo, Minnesota, the town that I work in, that Caleb could have went to get help he needed and get caught up with his grades. The option was never given to Caleb, and when we asked why, the principal said he did not feel students should go to that school. As we talked to other parents, we have found out that the principal also told these parents their children should not go to that school. When we asked why Tim was never notified about this, they stated they only needed to contact the custodial parent. And the school is now saying they never received Tim's request. Tim stood there and watched her write down the information. This is their way out. We live in a very small community. Everybody knows everybody. Tim and I have a daughter together that attends the same school as his three boys. Her name is Samantha Jadowski, the last name as her three brothers. They are the only students at that school with the last name Jadowski. After Caleb passed away, Tim received a phone call on his cell phone. It was the principal of the school. When we asked him how he got Tim's cell number, his response was, we got it from Samantha's records. Tim attended his boys' school activities and was always introduced as their father on Parents' Night. As a parent, you want to do everything to help your child. That opportunity was never given to Tim. When two people divorce, the children cannot live with both parents on a permanent basis. They have two homes, not one. The judge signed the divorce decree, giving Tim joint legal custody with his children. He pays child support and has visitation. The school and staff do not have the right to decide what parent has rights and what parent does not. Joint legal means both parents are to be involved with the decision of education, religion, and health of that child. Tim's rights were taken away from him. After Caleb's death, we were told by Tim's two other boys that Caleb and them were told by their mom not to tell us about Caleb being held back. Wow. So now we question, the school was told the same thing. And I'm just going to add a little bit to that because we are not getting answers from the school. We have asked several questions. They will not give us answers. What I have read, St. Cloud, Minnesota schools are sending notification to both parents unless the non-custodial parent decides to opt out if there is documentation or if there is documentation stating otherwise. We feel the school staff, if the school staff, our school staff, had time to type and copy several papers of who has detention, in-school suspension, out-of-school suspension, and post them in the hallways, the bathrooms, and give them to each teacher to read off in class, they have enough staff to put both parents' information into their computer system. Caleb was teased and bullied in school for being held back. We made a promise to Caleb, we are going to do whatever it takes so another child or parent does not go through this. After Caleb passed away, we found out other things that we were never told. We feel that Caleb's life was like a puzzle. One of these pieces was being held back, and he felt like a failure. Pieces of the puzzle were fitting. Unfortunately, Caleb took that final piece with him. The school promised us they would make changes so both parents would be notified. That has not happened. They can send out a form with the school packets about both parents' information that is required to be filled out unless the custodial parent can show proof that the non-custodial parent does not have rights to that child or children. It is the courts and a judge that signed that divorce decree, not the school or the staff. So why does only one parent need to be notified when it comes to a child's education? We made a promise to Caleb. Please help us keep that promise. Don't let another child feel the way Caleb did. Don't make other parents feel like they failed their child. If the non-custodial parent decides to opt out, that is their loss, and they are only hurting themselves and their child. But the parent that wants to be involved should have that right, and the school should not decide that only one parent has rights. Non-custodial parents should not have to request to be involved. Their divorce decree gave them that right to be involved. We feel that a school district and staff is not above the law, and they do not have the right to take parents' rights away from them. Please allow both parents to be involved with their child's education. Thank you.
Thank you for that difficult story. Members, is there any discussion or any questions that you have of the witness or the author?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
I just can't help but just comment as well. I'm a co-author on the bill. I have a blended family. My first husband and I have been apart 20 years, and we have a great relationship. And as I raised my boys, the thing that he would get most sad about was that he didn't get the communication from the school. And I actually called and told them to add his name and address, and it never happened. And I would make sure to give him all the stuff, but I would forget, and then he would miss something, and he'd be like, how did you let that happen? So I know that it's a very serious thing, and that's why I was thankful that Senator Kubley asked me to be a co-author on the bill. So I'm sorry for your loss, and thank you for taking your loss and, you know, taking this action with it.
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond to that. I also come from divorced parents. And when I was growing up, I could never figure out why my father never came to my stuff. And when I asked him about it, he didn't know about it. So I would call him and tell him things that were happening. But as a child, I felt like my father didn't care. And that is the worst feeling a child can have in school. And with all the other things that we found out about Caleb, above and beyond that, I mean, in seventh and eighth grade, when you are held back, is devastating. Your hormones, everything is changing. You don't adjust to it. When you're in kindergarten or first grade, you adjust. It's easier to adjust. But there is so much bullying and teasing. It doesn't go away. And we have talked to several divorced parents, and statistics show in school districts you have more children in there from divorced parents than you have from parents that are still married. So this is a huge, huge issue. And we have talked to several parents that are divorced. They have gone out to that school district. They have been denied. They actually were told they had to bring out their divorce decrees to prove they even had joint custody of their children. I don't think that's fair. It's almost like we're being put on trial to prove that we have rights to that child.
Senator Kubley, maybe you can answer this or our witnesses. You indicated that there's joint custody. Your statement here just said a district must provide to a non-custodial parent. But I'm not familiar with the having not served on judiciary as to whether you're talking about, you know, if one parent is granted custody, and is there a different obligation than if joint custody is granted, but they're living with one versus the other? Their visitation rights, I think, are a different thing. But are you aiming at this at if there's joint custody of a child, that there's a different responsibility in relation to the provision of information? Because this is, I think this is a broader statement than the specifics that this couple has raised.
Madam Chair, as they're pondering it, this would apply to non-custodial, and I think that's their clear intent. Usually the decree is going to also recite this right of access to records. Most decrees I'm aware of will have that. It'll be in the stipulation agreement. And this is a case where, you know, tragically, your rights were not implemented at that school, and I feel so sorry.
Madam Chair, what we were trying to get is if the divorce decree states that, like I said, a child cannot live in both homes. I mean, you have to have a permanent home, and then you can go to your mother or father's home, whoever you don't live with permanently. Tim and I both come, we both are divorced. And what we are asking is if the divorce decree gives that parent rights to that children, I mean, because there are degrees, stipulations out there that parents don't have any rights to their children, their rights have been taken away from them, or if there's a restraining order or whatever. If the divorce states that that other parent has visitation or has legal rights to that child, they should be notified.
So, Senator Kubley, you know, I'm just not sure if, you know, we had somebody here from the School Board Association.
Well, Madam Chair.
Could we just determine if, or somebody that could respond to this, if the law needs to be changed or what the situation is that we're dealing with?
Madam Chair, I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. A couple things the committee should know. In the Marriage Dissolution Act, there's a provision in there that says every divorce decree, this is what Senator Wieger was getting to, must provide that both parents are entitled to receive information regarding the child's education unless there are specific factual findings to the contrary. So every divorce decree comes out with a presumption that non-custodial or custodial are entitled to those records. The what you're discussing here is there is joint legal custody, joint physical custody, sole legal custody, or sole physical custody. When one parent has sole legal custody, when that parent interacts with the school, then that parent consents to the decisions. That parent is entitled to say the kid can go on the field trip, the kid can, you know, the contact pieces. The federal law provides in FERPA that we cannot withhold information from a parent unless we are served with an order that says we are to withhold it. So when a disgruntled parent comes to the school and says, don't give it to that other parent, we say, you have to go get a court order prohibiting us from giving it. What this bill does is schools don't have an obligation to send information to parents under any circumstances unless it's requested. This bill changes that, and I think you might want to have a look at it, that this says we're to provide, and it doesn't say what, but we're to provide all information to parents. Well, we might be sending an awful lot of stuff, you know, under this. It may go a lot farther than the tragic factual circumstance that you're identifying here. So, but that's the scope of it.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Yeah, sure. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very tragic, and certainly I'm saddened to hear that happened. I will say that in some school districts, they do have policies that provide that information. I know the district I taught in, we were specifically given the instructions to make sure that both parents were given information. My question is, the current the language that says a district must provide the information to the non-custodial parent, I'm just wondering, what if the school district doesn't have contact information for that non-custodial parent? I mean, it is possible, is it not, that there would be a non-custodial parent where the school district did not know how to contact them? Are we saying the school district has to hire a special investigator to track down this parent to make sure that they do get the information? I'm just concerned about how this very well-intended how this would play out in districts, especially larger communities where, or maybe the non-custodial parent is absent, you know, not paying child support, just gone. So how would this play out in those type of districts?
Senator, those situations? Could you clarify too, did you say earlier that this legislation may not really be needed? Or is there other, you know,
Madam
does
Chair,
it relate to just some recourse for a individual situation? Could you amplify that for us?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I did say at the outset that I wasn't sure that this case would not be covered under current statute. 518.17 says that it doesn't make any difference whether you have sole or joint custody. Both parents are to be notified of school, medical, dental, and religious training and other important records and information on minor children. So it does seem to me that it's covered. It lists several other things about attendance and the child's welfare, educational progress, which is clearly covered in this case, are also covered in this statute.
Is there any, Senator Kuby, is there any provision in there when that is not done? I think they've testified that the school did not do this. What recourse do they have, or is that in the current law? Because we're not the Judiciary Committee, so
yeah, Madam Chair and members, the statute simply says that the court must offer notification if that information is not to be made available.
So
to be referred to judiciary.
What's your pleasure relative to this bill, Senator Kubley?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I would like to ask a few more questions, if you wouldn't mind laying it on the table for now, and see if we need to make some changes that would address situations like this to make it. I think it's clear in the current statute that the school has that responsibility, but, you know, clearly they're seeing it a different way.
Madam Chair.
So I'm going to respond to Chris. Since we have not moved this bill, it's not before us, I do have the authority to lay it on the table. So it will give you a chance to research it further and determine whether there is some correction or some change that needs to be made here or at another committee. Senator Hand?
Well, Madam Chair, and that was my question. Do we want to send this off to the Judiciary Committee and have them wrestle with this, or do we want to try to solve those legal issues here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me check on that. I'm not sure if we need to take an action to send it to the floor to get it to Judiciary or what we might do, but why don't we find out about that, and that'll give you some time to check on what you wish to do. If there's recourse for them about this, or whether it requires a law change in order to assure that it happens, it seemed that it was fairly clear that there is an obligation, and you know, I don't know if there's anybody else that went from school boards or somebody else that would wish to respond to that, but. It does appear that there was some negligence on the part of a school in not addressing their requests.
Well, Madam Chair, if you don't mind laying it on the table for now, and I can come back and tell you whether I would like to have it sent to Judiciary, if that would be agreeable.
Sure. Thank you very much. I will lay it on the bill on the table.
Well, thank you, Madam
You're
Chair
welcome.
And member.
Senator Wieger?
Madam Chair, I was just going to suggest as well that you could contact the State Bar Association, and the family law section could provide some additional insight on the statute cited and what is included now for notice requirements, and they may have some additional suggestions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing this very difficult story and for what you've experienced. This is very, very sad. Members, I know that a few of you I had offered the book Disrupting Class, and I don't know if you've dug into it, but I do have some more copies. This is an interesting book about innovations that disrupt, and it's a concept that was developed for business, and it shows how businesses have responded or not responded and what the fate is when they don't deal with disruptive innovations. And only this applies it to education. And it's quite an interesting examination of the role of innovation and disruptive innovations as it relates to education. And we're going to be having some more dialogue as we consider innovation in education. And I would some books have been provided. Kurt Johnson from our is one of the authors and the co-authors with Clayton Christensen, a Harvard professor in this business area. And I've got a few copies here. If any of you would like to have some reading over this weekend, come and we'll give you a copy. Judy, so we'll keep track of them. I think you're welcome to keep it, but if we can pass circulate them around, that will help too. But whatever you like.
Sorry.
The meeting is adjourned.